Chapter 10, Midsummer Eve. Grandpa prodded the logs in the fireplace with a poker. A shower of sparks swirled up the chimney as one log split open, revealing an interior of glowing embers. Dale poured himself a cup of steaming coffee, adding 3 spoonfuls of sugar. Lena peered out the window through the blinds.
"The sun will reach the horizon in moments," she announced.
Kendra sat beside Seth on the sofa, watching Grandpa stoke the fire. The preparations were all in place. The entrances to the house were crowded with jack-o'-lanterns. Lena had been right. Dale had carved more than 200 of them. Not quite 30 fairies had reported for duty, many fewer than Grandpa had expected, even given the recently strained relations. 8 of the fairy lanterns were placed on the roof outside the attic, 4 at each window. Glow sticks illuminated most of the pumpkins, 2 in each. Grandpa Sorensen apparently ordered them in bulk.
"Will it start right when the sun goes down?" Seth asked. "Things won't really get going until twilight fades,"
Grandpa said, setting the poker beside the other fire irons.
"But the hour has come for you children to retire to your room."
"Oh, but I want to stay up with you,"
Seth said.
"The attic bedroom is the safest place in the house,"
Grandpa said.
"Why don't we all stay in the attic?"
Kendra asked. Grandpa shook his head.
"The spells that make the attic impenetrable function only if it is occupied by children. Without children, or with adults in the room, the barriers become ineffectual."
"Isn't the whole house supposed to be safe?"
Kendra asked.
"I believe so, but on an enchanted preserve, nothing is ever certain. I am concerned by the scant number of fairies who reported this afternoon. I worry this could be a particularly uproarious Midsummer Eve. Perhaps the worst since I've lived here."
A long, mournful howl underscored his statement. The disturbing call was answered by a stronger howl, closer, that ended with a cackle. Chills tingled behind Kendra's shoulders.
"The sun is gone," Lena reported from the window. She squinted, then put a hand to her mouth.
Closing the slat, she stepped away from the blinds.
"They're already entering the yard."
Kendra leaned forward. Lena really looked upset. She had paled visibly. Her dark eyes were unsettled. Grandpa scowled.
"Real trouble?"
She nodded. Grandpa clapped his hands together.
"Up to the attic!"
The tension in the room prevented Kendra from uttering any protest. Apparently, Seth sensed the same urgency. Grandpa Sorensen followed them up the stairs, down the hall, and up into their bedroom.
"Get under your covers,"
Grandpa said.
"What's around the beds?"
Seth asked, examining the floor.
"Circles of special salt,"
Grandpa said.
"An extra protection."
Kendra stepped carefully over the salt, pulled back the covers, and climbed into bed. The sheets felt cool. Grandpa handed her a pair of small, spongy cylinders.
"Earplugs,"
he said, passing a pair to Seth as well.
"I suggest you wear them. They should help mute the tumult so you can sleep."
"Just cram them in our ears?"
Seth said, eyeing one suspiciously.
"That's the idea,"
Grandpa said. An eruption of high-pitched laughter blared up from the yard. Kendra and Seth exchanged a concerned glance. Grandpa took a seat at the edge of Kendra's bed.
"I need you kids to be brave and responsible for me tonight," he said.
They nodded silently.
"You should know,"
he went on,
"I didn't let you come here merely as a favor to your parents. Your grandmother and I are getting on in years. The day will come when somebody else will need to care for this preserve. We need to find heirs. Dale is a good man, but he has no interest in running things here. You kids have impressed me so far. You are bright, adventurous, and courageous. There are some unpleasant aspects to living here. Festival nights are a good example.
Perhaps you wonder why we don't just all go spend the night in a hotel. If we did, we would return to find the house in ruins. Our presence is essential to the magic that protects these walls. If you are ever going to be involved with the work on this preserve, you will need to learn to cope with certain unpleasant realities. Look at tonight as a test. If the chaotic clamor outside is too much for you, then you do not belong here. There is no shame in this. People who belong here are rare.
We'll be fine, Seth said.
I believe you will. Listen carefully to my final instructions. Once I leave the room, no matter what you hear, no matter what happens, do not leave your beds. We will not come to check on you until morning. You may think you hear me, or Dale, or Lena, asking to come in. Be forewarned, it will not be us. This room is invulnerable unless you open a window or the door. Remain in your beds, and that will not happen. With the fairy lanterns at your window, odds are that nothing will come near this part of the house. Try to ignore the tumult of the night, and we'll all share a special breakfast in the morning. Any questions?
I'm scared, Kendra said. Don't go.
You'll be safer without me. We'll be keeping watch downstairs all night. Everything will be fine. Just go to sleep.
It's okay, Grandpa, Seth said. I'll keep an eye on her.
Keep the other on yourself,
Grandpa said sternly.
You mind me tonight. This is no game.
I will.
Outside, the wind began to whistle through the trees. The day had been calm, but now a groaning gust shook the house. Overhead, the shingles rattled and the timbers creaked. Grandpa crossed to the door.
Strange winds are blowing. I better get downstairs. Good night. Sleep tight. I'll greet you at sunrise.
He closed the door. The wind subsided. Goldilocks clucked softly.
You've got to be kidding, Kendra said.
I know,
Seth said.
I'm practically wetting the bed.
I don't think I'll sleep all night.
I know I won't.
We better try, said Kendra.
Okay.
Kendra inserted the earplugs. Closing her eyes, she curled up and snuggled into her covers. All she had to do was fall asleep, and she could escape the frightening sounds of the night. She forced herself to relax, letting her body go limp, and tried to clear her mind. It was hard not to fantasize about inheriting the estate. No way would they give it to Seth. He would blow the whole place up in 5 minutes. What would it be like to know all the mysterious secrets of Fablehaven? It might be scary if she were alone. She would have to share the secret with her parents so they could live with her. After a couple of minutes, she rolled over to face the other direction. She always had a tough time falling asleep when she was too deliberate about it. She tried to think of nothing, tried to focus on calm, regular breathing. Seth was saying something, but the earplugs muffled it. She pulled them out.
What? I said, the suspense is killing me. Are you actually using the earplugs?
Of course. You're not?
I don't want to miss anything.
Are you crazy?
I'm not tired at all,
he said.
Are you?
Not much.
Dare me to look out the window?
Don't be stupid.
It's barely sunset. What better time to look?
How about never?
Oh, you're a bigger chicken than Goldilocks.
And you've got less brains than Hugo.
The wind rose again, steadily gaining force. Warbling moans echoed on the breeze, groaning in different pitches, forming eerie, discordant harmonies. A long, bird-like scream overpowered the ghostly chorus of moans, starting at one side of the house, passing overhead, and finally fading. In the distance, a bell began to toll. Seth no longer looked quite so brave.
Maybe we should try to get some sleep,
he said, putting in the earplugs. Kendra did likewise. The sounds were muffled, but continued. The haunted wind lamenting, the house shuddering, an increasing assortment of shrieks, screams, howls, and wild bursts of gibbering laughter. The pillow grew warm, so Kendra flipped it over to the cold side. The only light in the room had been filtering through the curtains. As twilight dimmed, the room darkened. Kendra pressed her hands over her ears, trying to augment the dampening power of the earplugs. She told herself the sounds were just a storm. A deep, throbbing beat joined the cacophony, keeping a steady rhythm. As the pulsing percussion increased in volume and tempo, it was accompanied by chanting in a wailing language. Kendra resisted otherworldly images of vicious demons on the hunt. A pair of hands closed around her throat. She jumped and flailed, smacking Seth across the cheek with the back of her hand.
"Jeez," Seth complained, stumbling away.
"You asked for it. What's the matter with you?"
"You should have seen your face,"
he laughed, recovering from the slap.
"Get back in bed."
He sat on the side of her bed.
"You should take out your earplugs. The noise isn't so bad after a while. It reminds me of that CD Dad plays on Halloween."
She removed them.
"Except it's shaking the house, and it isn't make-believe."
"Don't you want to look out the window?"
"No, stop talking about it."
Seth leaned over and turned on the nightlight, a glowing statuette of Snoopy.
"I don't see the big deal. I mean, there's all sorts of cool things out there right now. What's wrong with just taking a little peek?"
"Grandpa said not to get out of your bed."
"Grandpa lets people look when they get older,"
Seth said.
"Dale told me, so it can't be that dangerous. Grandpa just thinks I'm an idiot."
"Yeah, and he's right."
"Think about it. You wouldn't want to run across a tiger out in the wilderness. You'd be scared to death. But at a zoo, who cares? It can't get you. This room is safe. Peeking out the window will be like looking at a zoo full of monsters."
"More like looking out of a shark cage."
A sudden staccato flurry of pounding shook the roof, as if a team of horses were galloping across the shingles. Seth flinched, raising his arms protectively. Kendra heard the creak and rattle of wagon wheels.
"Don't you want to see what that was?"
Seth asked.
"Are you trying to tell me that didn't scare you?"
"I expect to be scared. That's the whole point."
"If you don't get back in bed," warned Kendra, "I'm telling Grandpa in the morning."
"Don't you want to see who's playing the drums?"
"Seth, I'm not kidding. You probably won't even be able to see anything."
"We have a telescope."
Something outside roared, a thunderous bellow of bestial ferocity. It was enough to silence the conversation. The night continued to rage. The roar came again, if anything, with greater intensity, momentarily drowning out all the other commotion. Kendra and Seth eyed one another.
"I bet it's a dragon,"
he said breathlessly, running over to the window.
"Seth, no!"
Seth pulled aside the curtain. The four jack-o'-lanterns shed a mellow illumination across the portion of the roof directly beyond the window. For a moment, Seth thought he saw something swirling in the darkness at the edge of the light, a whirling mass of silky black fabric. Then he saw only blackness.
"No stars,"
he reported.
"Seth, get away from there!"
Kendra had her sheets pulled up to her eyes. He squinted through the window a moment longer.
"Too dark. I can't see anything."
A glimmering fairy floated up from one of the jack-o'-lanterns, peering at Seth through the slightly warped window pane.
"Hey, a fairy came out."
The tiny fairy waved an arm and was joined by three others. One made a face at Seth, and then all four streaked away into the night. Now he could see nothing. Seth closed the curtain and backed away from the window.
"You had your look,"
Kendra said.
"Are you satisfied?"
"The fairies and the jack-o'-lanterns flew away,"
he said.
"Oh, nice work. They probably saw who they were guarding."
"Actually, I think you're right. One made a face at me."
Get back in bed,
Kendra ordered. The drumming ceased, along with the chanting. The ghostly wind grew quiet. The howls and screams and laughter diminished in volume and frequency. Something pattered across the roof. Then, silence.
Something's wrong,
Seth whispered.
They probably saw you. Get back in bed.
I have a flashlight in my emergency kit.
He went to the nightstand by his bed and withdrew a small flashlight from the cereal box. Kendra kicked off her sheets and lunged at Seth, tackling him onto his bed. She wrenched the flashlight from his grasp and pushed off him to regain her feet. He charged her. Twisting, she used his momentum to shove him onto her bed.
Quit it, Seth, or I'll go get Grandpa right now.
I'm not the one starting a fight.
His expression was a portrait of wounded resentment. She hated when he tried to act like the victim after initiating trouble.
Neither am I.
First you hit me, then you jump on me.
You stop breaking the rules or I'm going straight downstairs.
You're worse than the witch. Grandpa should build you a shack.
Get in your bed.
Give me my light. I bought it with my own money.
They were interrupted by the sound of a baby crying. There was nothing desperate about it, just the bawling of an upset infant. The crying seemed to emanate from outside the darkened window.
A little baby,
Seth said.
No, it's some trick.
Mama!
The baby whined.
Sounds pretty real,
Seth said.
Let me take a look.
It's going to be a skeleton or something.
Seth grabbed the flashlight from Kendra. She neither gave it to him nor prevented him from taking it. He jogged over to the window. Holding the front of the flashlight against the window pane and cupping a hand around it to minimize reflection, he switched it on.
Oh my gosh,
he said.
It really is a baby.
Anything else?
Just a crying baby.
The crying stopped.
Now he's looking at me.
Kendra could no longer resist. She went and stood behind Seth. There on the roof, just beyond the window, stood a tear-streaked toddler who looked barely old enough to stand. The baby wore cloth diapers and nothing else. He had wispy blonde curls and a little round tummy with an outie belly button. Eyes brimming with tears, the child held out its pudgy arms toward the window.
It has to be a trick,
Kendra said.
An illusion.
Spotlighted by the flashlight, the toddler took a step toward the window and fell to all fours. He pouted, on the verge of crying again. Standing up, the baby tried another wobbly step. Goosebumps stood out on his chest and arms.
He looks real,
said Seth.
What if he's real?
Why would a baby be on the roof?
The baby toddled to the window, pressing a chubby palm against the glass. Something glinted in the light behind him. Seth shifted the beam onto a pair of green-eyed wolves approaching stealthily from the edge of the roof. The animals paused as the light fell on them. Both looked mangy and lean. One of the wolves bared sharp teeth, foam frothing from its mouth. The other was missing an eye.
They're using him as bait,
Seth yelled. The baby looked back at the wolves, then turned back toward Seth and Kendra, bawling with renewed vigor, fresh tears streaming, tiny hands slapping the window panes. The wolves charged. The toddler wailed. In her cage, Goldilocks clucked wildly.
Seth threw open the window.
No!
Kendra shouted, although she reflexively wanted to do the same thing. The instant the window opened, wind gushed into the room as if the air itself had been waiting to pounce. The baby dove into the room, transforming grotesquely as it landed on the floor in a deft somersault. The child was replaced by a leering goblin with yellow slits for eyes, a puckered nose, and a face like a dried cantaloupe. Bald and scabrous on top, the head was fringed by long, web-like hair. The sinuous arms were gangly, the hands long and leathery, tipped with hooked claws. Ribs, collarbones, and pelvis jutted hideously. Spidery networks of veins bulged against maroon flesh. With supernatural haste, the wolves also sailed through the window before Seth could move to close it. Kendra shoved past Seth and jerked the window shut in time to impede the entrance of a coldly beautiful woman swathed in writhing black garments. The apparition's dark hair undulated like vapor in a breeze. Her pallid face was slightly translucent. Gazing into those empty, searing eyes froze Kendra where she stood. Babbling whispers filled her mind. Her mouth felt dry. She could not swallow. Seth yanked the curtains shut and tugged Kendra toward the bed. Whatever trance had momentarily gorgonized her dissolved. Disoriented, she ran alongside Seth to the bed, sensing something in pursuit. When they leaped onto the mattress, a brilliant light flared behind them, accompanied by a crisp stutter like firecrackers. Kendra twisted to get a look. The maroon goblin stood near the bed, coddling its bony shoulder. The scowling creature stood about as tall as Dale. Hesitantly, it reached a knobby hand toward her, and another bright flash sent it staggering away. The circle of salt. At first, she had not grasped why Seth was dragging her to the bed. At least one of them was thinking. Glancing down, Kendra saw that the 2-inch dune of salt surrounding the bed indeed marked the line the goblin could not cross. A 12-foot centipede with 3 sets of wings and 3 pairs of taloned feet corkscrewed around the room in a complex aerial display. A brutish monster with a pronounced underbite and plates down its spine hurled a wardrobe across the room. The wolves had shed their disguises as well. The maroon goblin cavorted around the room in a feral tantrum, tearing down bookshelves, upsetting toy chests, and snapping the horn off the rocking horse. It picked up Goldilocks' cage and flung it against the wall. The slender bars crumpled and the door sprang open. The terrified chicken took to ungainly flight in a flurry of golden feathers. Goldilocks was coming toward the bed. The winged centipede struck at the flustered hen, but missed. The maroon demon made an acrobatic leap and caught the chicken by both legs. Goldilocks clucked and squirmed in mortal panic. Seth jumped off the bed. Crouching, he scooped up 2 handfuls from the circle of salt and charged the wiry goblin. Now holding the chicken in one hand, the sneering goblin rushed to meet him. An instant before the outstretched hand of the demon reached him, Seth flung a handful of salt. Releasing Goldilocks, the demon reeled back, scorched by a blinding blaze. The chicken made straight for the bed, and Seth tossed his other handful of salt in a wide arc to cover their retreat, scalding the flying centipede in the process. The bulky creature with the underbite tried to beat Seth to the bed, arriving too late and receiving a violent shock as it collided with the invisible salt barrier. Back on the bed, Seth clung to Goldilocks, arms quivering convulsively. The maroon demon growled. His face and chest were charred from the salt. Tendrils of smoke curled up from the burns. Turning, the demon pulled a book from the shelf and tore it in half. The door flew open, and Dale leveled a shotgun at the monster with the underbite.
"You kids stay put, no matter what," he called.
All 3 monsters converged on the doorway. Dale retreated down the stairs, guns silent. The winged centipede spiraled out the door above the other scrambling creatures. They heard a shotgun blast from down in the hall.
"Shut the door and stay put," Dale hollered.
Kendra ran and slammed the door, then sprinted back to her bed. Seth held Goldilocks, tears streaming down his cheeks.
I didn't mean for this to happen, he whimpered.
It'll be okay.
From downstairs came repeated gunshots, growls, roars, shrieks, glass shattering, wood splintering. Outside, the cacophonous uproar resumed louder than ever. Pagan drums, ethereal choirs, tribal chanting, wailing lamentations, guttural snarls, unnatural howls, and piercing screams united in relentless disharmony. Kendra, Seth, and Goldilocks sat on the bed awaiting dawn. Kendra had to constantly fight images of the woman with the swirling black garments. She could not get the apparition out of her mind. When she had looked into those soulless eyes, even though the lady was outside, Kendra had felt certain there would be no escape. Late in the night, the furor finally began to relent, replaced by more unnerving sounds. Babies began to cry beyond the window again, calling for Mama. When that failed to elicit a response, the voices of young children pleaded for help.
Kendra, please hurry. They're coming.
Seth! Seth! Open up! Help us! Seth, don't leave us out here!
After the cries went ignored for a while, snarls and screams would simulate the demise of the young supplicants. Then a new batch of solicitors began begging for admittance. Perhaps most disconcerting was when Grandpa was inviting them down to breakfast.
We made it, kids. The sun is rising. Come on. Lena cooked hotcakes.
How do we know you're our Grandpa?
Kendra asked, more than a little suspicious.
Because I love you. Hurry, the food's getting cold.
I don't think the sun is up yet,
Seth replied.
Oh, it's just a little cloudy this morning.
Go away, Kendra said.
Just let me in. I want to kiss you good morning.
Our grandpa never kisses us, you sicko,
Seth yelled.
Get out of our house!
The exchange was followed by a vicious banging on the door for a solid 5 minutes. The hinges shook, but the door held. The night wore on. Kendra leaned against the headboard as Seth dozed at her side. Despite the noise, her eyelids began to feel heavy. Suddenly, she jerked awake. Gray light was seeping through the curtains. Goldilocks wandered the floor, pecking at kernels from her spilled bucket of feed. When the curtains were masking unmistakable sunlight, Kendra nudged Seth. He looked around, blinking, then crept to the window and peeked out.
The sun is officially up,
he announced.
We made it.
I'm scared to go downstairs, whispered Kendra.
Everybody's fine,
Seth said nonchalantly.
Then why haven't they come to get us?
Seth had no response. Kendra had gone easy on him during the night. The consequences for opening the window were brutal enough without placing blame and starting arguments. And Seth had really acted remorseful. But now he was reverting to his idiot self. Kendra glared at him.
You realize you might have killed them all?
His face fell and he turned away, shoulders shaking with sobs. He buried his face in his hands.
They're probably fine, he squeaked. Dale had a gun and everything. They know how to handle themselves.
Kendra felt bad, seeing that Seth clearly was worried too. She went to him and tried to give him a hug. He shoved her away.
Leave me alone.
Seth, whatever happened isn't your fault.
Of course it's my fault.
His nose was getting congested.
I mean, they tricked us. I sort of wanted to open the window, too, when I saw those wolves charging. You know, in case it wasn't fake.
Well, I knew it might be a trick, he sobbed. But that baby looked so real. I thought they might have kidnapped him to use him as bait. I thought I could save him.
You were trying to do the right thing.
She attempted to hug him once more, but he pushed her away again.
Don't,
he snapped.
I didn't mean to blame you,
said Kendra.
You were acting like you didn't even care.
Of course I care. You don't think I'm terrified to go down there and find out what I did?
You didn't do it. They tricked you. I would have opened the window if you hadn't.
If I would have stayed in bed, none of it would have happened,
Seth lamented.
Maybe they're fine.
Right. And they let a monster come in the house and up to our door, pretending to be Grandpa.
Maybe they had to hide down in the basement or someplace.
Seth was no longer crying. He picked up a doll and used her dress to wipe his nose.
I hope so.
just in case something bad did happen, you can't blame yourself. All you did was open a window. If those monsters did something bad, it's their fault.
Partly.
Grandpa and Lena and Dale all know that living here is risky. I'm sure they're fine. But if they aren't, you mustn't blame yourself.
Whatever.
I'm serious.
I like it better when you're funny.
You know what I liked? Kendra said.
What?
When you saved Goldilocks.
He laughed, snorting a little through his stuffy nostrils.
Yeah, did you see how bad the salt burned that guy?
He retrieved the doll and wiped his nose again on the dress.
It was really brave.
I'm just glad it worked.
It was quick thinking.
Seth glanced at the door and then back at Kendra.
We should probably go check out the damage.
If you say so.
Chapter 11. Aftermath. Kendra knew it would be bad the moment she opened the door. Ragged gouges furrowed the walls of the stairwell. Crude pictograms defaced the far side of the door, along with an abundance of less orderly nicks and scratches. Near the base of the stairs, a crusty brown substance was smeared on the wall.
I'm grabbing some salt, Seth said.
He returned to the ring around the bed and filled his hands and pockets with the salt that had scorched the intruder the night before. When Seth rejoined her, Kendra started down the stairs. The steps creaked loudly in the quiet house. The hall at the bottom was worse than the stairway. Again, the walls had been savagely raked by claws. The bathroom door was off its hinges and had three splintery holes of different sizes. Patches of carpeting were burned and stained. Kendra moved down the hall, appalled by the aftermath of the violent night. A smashed mirror, a broken light fixture, a table reduced to kindling, and at the end of the hall, a gaping rectangle instead of a window.
Looks like they let others in, Kendra said, pointing down the hall.
Seth was examining singed hairs in a damp stain on the floor.
Grandpa?
He yelled.
Anybody?
The silence was an ominous answer. Kendra descended the stairs to the entry hall. Sections of the banister were gone. The front door hung askew, an arrow protruding from the frame. Primitive drawings marred the walls, some scored, others scrawled. In a trance, Kendra roamed the lower rooms of the house. The place had been gutted. Almost all the windows were destroyed. Battered doors lay far from their frames. Mutilated furniture bled stuffing onto mangled carpeting. Shredded drapes dangled in tattered ribbons. Chandeliers lay in shattered ruins. Half of one charred sofa was entirely missing. Kendra wandered to the back porch. Wind chimes lay in tangles. The furniture was scattered around the garden. A broken rocking chair balanced atop a fountain. A wicker love seat protruded from a hedge. Back in the house, Kendra found Seth in Grandpa's office. It looked as if an anvil had fallen on the desk. Pulverized memorabilia littered the floor.
Everything's trashed, Seth said.
It looks like a demolition team came through here with sledgehammers.
Or hand grenades.
Seth indicated where tar appeared to have been slopped against the wall.
Is that blood?
It looks too dark to be human.
Seth picked his way around the splintered desk to the empty window.
Maybe they got out.
I hope so.
Out on the lawn,
Seth said.
Is that a person?
Kendra approached the window.
Dale!
She shouted. The prone figure did not move.
Come on,
Seth said, hurrying through the wreckage. Kendra followed him out the front door and around to the side of the house.
They dashed over to the figure lying supine near an overturned birdbath.
"Oh, no," Seth said.
It was a painted statue of Dale. A faithful replica, except the paint was more simplified than his actual coloring would have been. His head was turned to one side, eyes squinted shut, arms raised protectively. The proportions were exact. He was wearing the same outfit he had worn the previous night. Kendra touched the figure. It was made of metal, clothes and all. Bronze, maybe. Lead? Steel? She wrapped her knuckles against the forearm. Sounded solid. No hollow ringing.
"They turned him into a statue," Seth said. "You think it's really him?" "It has to be. Help me flip him over."
Both of them strained, but Dale did not budge. He was way too heavy.
"Oh, I really blew it," Seth said,
palms pressed against his temples.
"What have I done?"
"Maybe we can change him back."
Seth kneeled down and put his mouth to Dale's ear.
"If you can hear me, give us a sign," he yelled.
The metallic figure made no response.
"Do you think Grandpa and Lena are around here too?"
Kendra asked.
"We'll have to look."
Kendra cupped her hands around her mouth.
"Grandpa! Grandpa Sorensen! Lena! Can you hear me?"
"Look at this," Seth said,
crouching beside the overturned birdbath. The birdbath had tipped over toward a flower bed. In the flower bed was a clear footprint, three large toes and a narrow heel. The print was big enough to suggest that it came from a creature at least the size of a grown man.
"Giant bird?"
"Check out the hole behind the heel."
He stuck a finger into a nickel-sized hole.
"A couple inches deep."
"Weird."
Seth acted excited.
"Oh, it has a pointy thing on the back of its heel. A spur or something."
"Which means what?"
"We can probably track it."
"Track it?"
Seth moved forward in the direction the toes pointed, scanning the ground.
"See?"
He crouched, pointing at a hole in the lawn.
"That spur digs deep. It should leave a clear trail."
"And what happens if you catch up to whatever made the tracks?"
He patted his pockets.
"I throw some salt and rescue Grandpa."
"How do you know it took Grandpa?"
"Well, I don't," he admitted. "But it's a start."
"What if it turns you into a painted statue?"
"I won't look directly at it. Just in mirrors."
"Where did you get that from?"
"History."
"You don't even know what you're talking about," Kendra said.
"We'll see about that. I better get my camel shirt."
"First, let's make sure there aren't any other statues in the yard."
"Fine. Then I'm out of here. I don't want the trail getting cold."
After scouring the yard for half an hour, Kendra and Seth had come across various articles of furniture from the house or porch in unexpected locations. But they had found no other life-sized painted statues. They ended up by the swimming pool.
"Have you noticed the butterflies?"
Kendra asked.
"Yeah."
"Anything special about them?"
Seth slapped his forehead with the heel of his hand.
"Oh, we haven't had milk today."
"Yep, no fairies, just bugs."
"If those fairies are smart, they won't show their faces around here,"
growled Seth.
"Yeah, you'll show them. What do you want to be this time, a giraffe?"
"None of this would have happened if they had kept guarding the window."
"You did torture one of them,"
Kendra pointed out.
"They tortured me back. We're even."
"Whatever we do, we should drink some milk first."
They went into the house. The refrigerator was lying on its side. Together they pried the door open. Some of the milk bottles had broken, but a few were intact. Kendra grabbed one, uncapped it, and took a sip. Seth drank next.
I need my stuff,
he said, bolting for the stairs. Kendra started searching for clues. Wouldn't Grandpa have tried to leave them a message? Maybe there hadn't been time. She walked through the rooms, but encountered no hints to explain the fate of either Lena or Grandpa. Seth showed up in his camouflage shirt, carrying the cereal box.
I was trying to find that shotgun. You haven't seen it.
Nope. There's an arrow by the front door. You could toss that at the monster.
I think I'll stick with assault. We never checked the basement,
Kendra said.
Worth a try.
They opened the door by the kitchen and stared down into the gloom. Kendra realized it was just about the only undamaged door in the house. Stone steps led into the darkness.
How about that flashlight? Kendra said.
No light switch?
He asked. They couldn't find one. He rummaged in the cereal box and withdrew the flashlight. With some salt from his pocket clutched in one hand and the flashlight in the other, Seth led the way. It was a longer flight than would ordinarily lead to a basement. More than 20 steep stairs. At the bottom, the flashlight beam illuminated a short, barren hallway ending at an iron door. They walked to the door. It had a keyhole below the handle. Seth tugged the handle, but the door was locked. There was a small hatch at the base of the door.
What's this?
He asked.
It's for brownies, so they can come in and fix stuff.
He pushed open the hatch.
Grandpa! Lena! Anybody!
They waited in vain for a reply. He called once more before standing and shining his light into the keyhole.
None of your keys would fit this?
He asked.
They're way too small.
There might be a key stashed in Grandpa's bedroom.
If they were down here, I think they'd answer.
Kendra and Seth started back up the stairs. At the top, they heard a loud, deep groan that lasted at least 10 seconds. The penetrating sound came from outside. It was much too powerful to have been made by a human. They raced to the back porch. The groan had ended. It was difficult to say from which direction it had originated. They waited, looking around, expecting a recurrence of the unusual sound. After a tense minute or two, Kendra broke the silence.
What was it? I bet it was whatever has Grandpa and Lena,
Seth said.
And it didn't sound too far off.
It sounded big.
Yeah.
Like whale big.
We have the salt,
Seth reminded her.
We need to follow that trail.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
You have a better one?
I don't know. Wait and see if they show up. Maybe they'll escape.
If that hasn't happened by now, it isn't going to. We'll be careful, and we'll make sure to get back before dark. We'll be fine. We have the salt. That stuff works like acid.
If something goes wrong, who saves us?
Kendra asked.
You don't have to come, but I'm going.
Seth hurried down the porch steps and started across the yard. Kendra reluctantly followed. She wasn't sure how they would pull off a rescue if scalding the monster with salt failed. But Seth was right about one thing. They couldn't just abandon Grandpa. Kendra caught up with Seth at the flower bed where they had originally found the prints. Combing through the grass together, they followed a series of nickel-sized holes across the lawn. The holes were spaced roughly 5 feet apart and followed a generally straight line, passing the barn and eventually leaving the yard along a narrow path into the woods. No longer obscured by grass, the tracks were even easier to follow. They passed a couple of intersecting paths, but the way was always certain. The prints of whatever creature had left the holes were unmistakable. They made rapid progress. Kendra remained alert, searching the trees for mythical beasts, but spotted nothing more spectacular than a goldfinch and some chipmunks.
I'm starving, Seth announced.
I'm okay. I'm getting sleepy, though.
Just don't think about it.
My throat is getting sore, Kendra went on. You know, we've been up almost 30 hours.
I'm not that tired, Seth said. Just hungry. We should have forage for food in the pantry. It can't be all smashed.
We must not be too hungry if we didn't think about it at the time. Suddenly, Seth stopped short.
Uh-oh.
What? Seth went several paces forward. Leaning close to the ground, he worked his way back past Kendra. He went forward again more slowly, kicking aside any leaves or branches on the trail. Kendra realized the problem before Seth vocalized it.
No more holes!
She helped scan the ground. They both scrutinized the same segment of the path multiple times before Seth began to search off the trail.
This could be bad, he said.
There's a lot of undergrowth, Kendra agreed.
If we could even find one hole, we'd know which direction it went.
If it left the path, we'll never be able to follow it.
Seth crawled on hands and knees along the edge of the path, sifting through the mulch beneath the undergrowth. Kendra picked up a stick and used it to poke around.
Don't make any holes,
Seth cautioned.
I'm just moving leaves.
You could do it with your hands.
If I wanted bug bites and a rash.
Hey, this is it.
He showed Kendra a hole about 5 feet from the last one on the path.
It turned left.
Diagonally.
She made a line with her hand connecting the two dots and continuing into the woods.
But it might have turned more, Seth said. We should find another one.
Finding the next hole took almost 15 minutes. It proved that the creature had indeed turned almost directly to the left, perpendicular to the path.
What if it kept turning? Kendra said.
It would sort of be backtracking if it turned more.
Maybe it wanted to throw off pursuit.
Seth went forward 5 feet and found the next hole almost instantly. It confirmed that the new course was perpendicular to the trail.
The undergrowth isn't as bad here, Seth said.
Seth, it would take all day to track it 20 paces.
I don't need to track it, just to walk in this direction for a while. Maybe it will intersect a trail and we can pick up tracks again. Or maybe it lives not much farther ahead.
Kendra put a hand in her pocket, feeling for the salt.
I don't like the idea of leaving the trail.
Me neither. We won't go far. But this thing seems to like trails. It followed one all this way. We may be close to a discovery. It's worth going a little ways just to check.
Kendra stared at her brother.
Okay. And what if we run into a cave?
Well, we take a look.
What if we hear breathing coming from the cave?
You don't have to go in. I'll look myself. The point is finding Grandpa.
Kendra bit her tongue. She almost said that if they found him out here, it would probably be in pieces.
Okay, just a little ways.
They walked in a straight line away from the path. They kept scanning the ground, but noticed no more holes. Before long, they crossed a dry, rocky stream bed. Not far beyond, they wandered into a little meadow. The brush and wildflowers in the meadow grew nearly waist high.
I don't see any other trails, Kendra said. Or any monster houses.
Let's take a good look around the meadow, said Seth.
He made a complete search of the perimeter of the meadow, finding neither holes nor trails.
Let's face it, Kendra said. If we try to go any farther, we'll be wandering blind.
What about climbing that hill?
Seth suggested, indicating the highest point visible from the meadow, less than a quarter mile away.
If I were going to make a home around here, it would be over there. Plus, if we get up there, we'll have a better view of the area. These trees make it hard to see.
Kendra pressed her lips together. The hill was not steep. It would be easy to climb, and it was not too far away.
If we don't find anything there, we go back?
Deal.
They marched toward the hill, which was along a different line from the course they had originally taken from the path. As they picked their way through denser underbrush, a twig snapped off to one side. They paused, listening.
I'm getting pretty nervous,
Kendra said softly.
We're fine. We're probably just a falling pine cone.
Kendra tried to push away images of the pallid woman with the swirling black garments. The thought of her made Kendra freeze. If she saw her out in the woods, Kendra worried she would just curl up in a ball on the ground and let herself be taken.
I'm losing track of which way we're going, she said.
Back under the trees, the line of sight to both hill and meadow was disrupted.
I have my compass. Oh, so if all else fails, we can find the North Pole. The trail we followed went northwest,
Seth assured her.
Then we left it going southwest. The hill is to the west. The meadow is east.
That's pretty good.
The only trick is paying attention.
Before long, the trees were thinning and they were walking up the hill. With the trees farther apart, the underbrush grew higher and the bushes bigger. Kendra and Seth wound their way up the moderate slope toward the crest.
Do you smell that?
Seth asked. Kendra stopped.
Yeah, like somebody cooking.
The smell was faint, but now that she noticed it, distinct. Kendra studied the area with sudden alarm.
Oh my gosh,
she said, crouching down.
What?
Get down!
Seth knelt beside her. Kendra pointed toward the crest of the hill. Off to one side rose a feeble column of smoke, a thin, wavering distortion.
Yeah, he whispered. We may have found it.
Again she had to bite her tongue. She hoped someone wasn't cooking Grandpa.
What do we do?
Stay here, said Seth. I'll go check it out.
I don't want to stay alone.
Then follow me, but stay back a bit. We don't want to both get caught at the same time. Keep salt ready.
Kendra did not need that reminder. Her only worry about the salt was that her sweaty hands were going to turn it to paste. Seth crept ahead, staying low, using the bushes for cover, gradually making his way toward the meager line of smoke. Kendra imitated his movements, impressed that his hours of playing army were finally paying off. Even as she followed him, she struggled to come to terms with what they were doing. Sneaking up on a monster cookout was among the activities she could do without. Shouldn't they be sneaking away? The trembling shaft of smoke grew nearer. Seth waved her up to him. She huddled beside him behind a wide bush twice her height, trying to breathe quietly. He put his lips to her ear.
I'll be able to see what's going on when I get around this bush. I'll try to yell if I get captured or anything. Be ready.
She put her mouth to his ear.
If you play a trick on me, I promise I will kill you. I really will.
I won't. I'm scared too.
He slunk forward. Kendra tried to calm herself. Waiting was torture. She considered moving around the bush to take a peek, but could not muster the courage. The silence was good, right? Unless they had stealthily dropped Seth with a poison dart. The pause stretched mercilessly. Then she heard Seth coming back less carefully than he had left. When he came around the bush, he was walking upright, saying,
Come here! You have to see this!
What is it?
Nothing scary!
She went around the bush with him, still tense. Up ahead, in a clear area near the summit of the hill, she saw the source of the thin smoke. A waist-high cylinder of stone with a wooden windlass and a dangling bucket.
A well?
Yeah, come smell.
They walked to the well. Even up close, the rising smoke remained vapory and indistinct. Kendra leaned over, staring down into the deep darkness.
Smells good.
Like soup, Seth said. Meat, veggies, spices.
Am I just hungry? It smells delicious.
I think so, too. Should we try some?
Lower the bucket?
Kendra asked skeptically.
Why not?
Seth replied.
There could be creatures down there.
I don't think so,
he said.
You think it's just a well full of stew?
Kendra scoffed.
We are on a magical preserve.
As far as we know, it could be poisonous.
It can't hurt to take a look,
Seth insisted.
I'm starving. Besides, not everything here is bad. I bet this is where fairy people come for dinner. See? It even has a crank.
He began turning the windlass, spooling the bucket down into the darkness.
I'm staying on lookout,
said Kendra.
Good idea.
Kendra felt exposed. They were far enough from the summit that she could not see anything on the far side of the hill. But they were high enough that she commanded an expansive view of trees and terrain when she looked down the slope. With little cover surrounding the well, she worried that unseen eyes might be spying from the foliage below. Seth continued unwinding the rope, sending the bucket ever deeper. Eventually, he heard it wetly hit bottom. The rope slackened a bit. After a moment, he began winding the bucket back up.
Hurry,
Kendra said.
I am. This thing is deep.
I'm worried everything in the forest can see us.
Here it comes.
He stopped cranking and pulled the bucket up the last few feet by hand, setting it on the lip of the well. Kendra joined him. Inside the wooden bucket, bits of meat, cut carrots, potato fragments, and onion floated in a fragrant yellow broth.
Looks like normal stew, Kendra said.
Better than normal. I'm trying some.
Don't, she warned.
Lighten up.
He tweezed out a piece of dripping meat and tried it.
Good,
he announced. He plucked out a potato and offered a similar report. Tipping the bucket, he slurped some of the broth.
Amazing,
he said.
You have to try it.
From behind the same bush they had used as their final hiding place when approaching the well, a creature emerged. From the waist up, he was a shirtless man with an exceptionally hairy chest and a pair of pointy horns above his forehead. From waist down, he had the legs of a shaggy goat. Wielding a knife, the satyr charged straight at them. Both Kendra and Seth turned in alarm at the sound of his hooves racing up the slope.
Salt!
Seth blurted, dipping into his pockets. As she fumbled for salt, Kendra dashed around the well, placing it between herself and the attacker. Not Seth. He stood his ground, and when the satyr was a couple of steps away, he flung a fistful of salt at the goatman. The satyr stopped short, obviously surprised by the cloud of salt. Seth threw a second handful, groping in his pockets for more. The salt failed to spark or sizzle. Instead, the satyr appeared bewildered.
What are you doing?
He asked in a hushed tone.
I could ask you the same question,
Seth replied.
No, you can't. You're spoiling our operation.
The satyr lunged past Seth and slashed the rope with his knife.
She's coming. Who?
Said Seth.
I'd save the questions for later,
the satyr said. He wound the rope until it was tight around the windlass, seized the bucket, and started down the hill, spilling soup as he went. From the far side of the hill, Kendra heard foliage rustling and branches crunching. She and Seth followed the satyr. The satyr slid into the bush Kendra had crouched behind earlier. Kendra and Seth dove in alongside him. An instant after they ducked out of sight, a bulky, hideous woman lumbered into view and approached the well. She had a broad, flat face with saggy earlobes that hung almost to her hefty shoulders. Her misshapen bosom drooped inside a coarse, homespun tunic. Her avocado skin had a rigid texture like corduroy. Her graying hair was shaggy and matted, and her build bordered on obese. The well barely came to her knees, making her considerably taller than Hugo. She waddled from side to side as she walked, and she was breathing heavily through her mouth. Bending over, she pawed at the well, stroking the wooden frame.
The ogress can't see much,
the satyr whispered. When he said it, the ogress jerked her head up. She yammered something in a guttural language, shambling a couple of steps away from the well.
She squatted down and sniffed at the ground where Seth had thrown his salt.
"There's been people here,"
she accused in a husky, accented voice.
"Where you peoples be?"
The satyr placed a finger against his lips. Kendra held perfectly still, trying to breathe softly despite her alarm. She tried to plan which direction she would run. The ogress lumbered down the slope toward their hiding place, sniffing high and low.
"I heard peoples. I smell peoples. And I smell my stew. People's been at my stew again. You come out now to apologize."
The satyr shook his head, slitting his throat with a finger for emphasis. Seth slid a hand into a pocket. The satyr touched his wrist and shook his head with a scowl. The ogress had already closed half the distance to the bush.
"You peoples like my stew so much, maybe you take a bath in it."
Kendra resisted the urge to bolt. The ogress would be on them in moments. But the satyr seemed to know what he was doing. He held up a hand, tacitly signaling for them to keep still. Without warning, something began crashing through the bushes about 20 yards to their right. The ogress pivoted and stumbled toward the ruckus with a quick, awkward gait. The satyr nodded. They scrambled out of the bush and started down the hill. Behind them, the ogress skidded to a halt and changed direction, coming after them. The goat man pitched the bucket of stew into a tangled patch of thorns and bounded over a fallen log. Kendra and Seth sprinted after him. Propelled by her downward momentum, Kendra found herself taking larger steps than she wanted. Each time her foot touched the ground became a fresh opportunity to lose her balance and tumble forward. Seth stayed a couple of steps ahead of her, and the swift satyr was gradually increasing his lead. Heedless of obstacles, the ogress pursued them noisily, trampling bushes and tearing through branches. She breathed in damp, wheezing gasps and cursed periodically, reverting to her unintelligible native tongue. Despite her cumbersome size and apparent exhaustion, the misshapen ogress was rapidly gaining. The slope leveled out. Behind Kendra, the ogress fell, branches and deadfall snapping like fireworks. Kendra glanced back, catching a glimpse of the burly ogress surging to her feet. The satyr led them into a shallow ravine where they found the wide entrance to a dark tunnel.
"This way,"
he said, dashing into the tunnel. Although it looked spacious enough for the ogress to enter, Seth and Kendra followed without question. The satyr appeared confident, and he had been right so far. The tunnel grew darker the deeper they ran. Heavy footsteps followed them. Kendra glanced back. The ogress filled the subterranean passageway, blocking out much of the light filtering in from the opening. It became hard to see the satyr up ahead. The tunnel was growing narrower. Close behind Kendra, the ogress gasped and coughed. Hopefully she would have a heart attack and collapse. For a space, the darkness became complete. Then it began to brighten. The tunnel continued to shrink. Soon Kendra had to crouch, and the walls were within reach at either side. The satyr slackened his pace, looking back with a mischievous grin. Kendra checked over her shoulder as well. The panting ogress crawled and then scooted forward on her belly, wheezing and choking. When she could worm no farther, she roared in frustration, a strained, throaty cry. After that, it sounded like she vomited. Up ahead, the satyr was crawling. The passage slanted upward. They emerged through a small gap into a bowl-shaped depression. A second satyr stood waiting for them. The second had redder hair than the first and slightly longer horns. He motioned for them to follow. The two satyrs and two children charged recklessly through the woods for a few more minutes. When they arrived at a clearing with a tiny pond, the red-headed satyr stopped and faced the others.
"What was the idea, ruining our operation?"
he asked.
"Clumsy work,"
the other satyr agreed.
We didn't know, Kendra said. We thought it was a well.
You thought our chimney was a well?
The redhead complained.
I suppose you sometimes mistake icicles for carrots or wagons for outhouses.
It had a bucket,
Seth said.
And it was in the ground,
Kendra added.
Ooh, they have a point,
the other satyr said.
You were on the roof of the ogress's lair,
explained the redhead.
We get it now,
Seth said.
We thought it was a hill.
Nothing wrong with pinching a bit of soup from her cauldron,
the redhead continued.
We try to be free with our assets, but you need to use some delicacy, a little finesse. At least wait until the old lady falls asleep. Who are you, anyhow?
Seth Sorensen.
Kendra.
I am Newell,
said the redhead.
This is Doran. You realize we probably have to construct a whole new rigging.
She'll rip the old one down,
Doran explained.
Almost more work than cooking our own stew,
Newell huffed.
We can't make it come out like she does,
Doran mourned.
She has a gift,
Newell agreed.
We're sorry, Kendra said. We were a little lost.
Doran waved a hand.
Don't worry. We just like to bluster. If you spoiled our wine, that would be another story.
Still,
Newell said,
a guy has to eat, and free stew is free stew.
We'll try to find a way to repay you,
Kendra said.
So will we,
Newell said.
You don't happen to have any, batteries?
Doran asked.
Batteries?
Seth asked, wrinkling his nose.
Yeah, so I see,
Newell clarified. Kendra folded her arms.
Why do you want batteries?
Oh, they're shiny,
Newell said, nudging Doran with an elbow.
We worship them,
Doran said, nodding sagely.
They seem like little gods to us.
The kids stared at the goatman in disbelief, unsure how to continue the conversation. They were obviously lying.
Okay,
Newell said.
We have a portable television.
Don't tell Stan.
We had a mountain of batteries, but we ran out.
And our supplier is no longer employed here.
Ah, we could work out an arrangement.
Newell spread his hands diplomatically.
Some batteries to repent for disrupting our stew siphoning.
Then we can trade for more. Gold, booze, you name it.
Doran lowered his voice slightly.
Of course, we would need to keep our arrangement private.
Stan doesn't like us watching the tube,
said Newell.
You know our grandpa?
Seth asked.
Who doesn't?
Newell said.
You haven't seen him lately?
Kendra asked.
Oh, sure. Just last week,
Doran said.
I mean since last night.
No, why?
Newell said.
Haven't you heard?
Seth asked. The satyrs shrugged at each other.
What's the news?
Newell asked.
Our grandpa was kidnapped last night,
Kendra said.
Your grandfather is a kid?
Newell said.
They mean he was abducted,
Doran clarified.
Kendra nodded. Creatures got into the house and took him and our housekeeper.
Not Dale?
Doran asked.
We don't think so,
Seth said. Newell shook his head.
Poor Dale. Never been very popular. Lousy sense of humor,
Doran agreed.
Too quiet.
You guys don't know who might have taken them?
Kendra asked.
On Midsummer Eve?
Newell said, tossing up his hands.
Oh, anybody. Your guess would be better than mine.
Could you help us find him?
Seth asked. The satyrs shared an uneasy glance.
Yeah, ouch,
Newell began uncomfortably.
This is a bad week for us.
Lots of commitments,
Doran confirmed, backing away.
You know, now that I've thought on it,
Newell said,
we may have needed a new rigging on the chimney anyhow. How about we go all separate ways and call it even?
Don't take anything we said to heart,
Doran said.
We were just being satirical.
Seth stepped forward.
Do you know something you aren't telling us? Oh, it isn't that,
Newell said, continuing his slow retreat.
It's just a midsummer day. We're booked.
Well, thanks for helping us get away from the ogress, Kendra said.
Oh, our pleasure,
Newell replied.
All part of the package,
Doran added.
Could you guys at least point us toward home?
Seth asked. The satyrs stopped retreating. Doran extended an arm.
There's a path over there. When you reach it, go right,
Newell said.
That will get you started in the right direction. Give our best to Stan when he turns up.
The satyrs hastily turned and dashed off into the trees. Chapter 12. Inside the Barn. Kendra and Seth located the path just as the satyrs had instructed and soon re-encountered the nickel-sized holes that served as a perfect trail of breadcrumbs toward home.
Those goat guys were idiots,
Seth said. They did save us from the ogress, Kendra reminded him.
They could have helped us rescue Grandpa, but they blew us off.
He wore a scowl as they continued along the path. As they neared the yard, they heard the inhuman groan again, the same sound they had heard while exiting the basement, only louder than ever. They halted. The perplexing sound was coming from up ahead, a long, plaintive moan, comparable to a blast from a foghorn. Seth dug some of the remaining salt out of a pocket and rushed ahead. With their quickened pace, they were soon back at the edge of the yard. Everything appeared normal. They saw no hulking behemoth capable of the enormous sound they had heard.
You know, that salt didn't do much to the satyr, Kendra whispered.
It probably only burns the bad creatures,
he replied.
I think the ogre lady picked some up.
It was all mixed in the dirt by then. You saw it torch those guys last night.
They waited, hesitant to enter the yard.
Now what?
Kendra asked. The mighty groan resounded across the yard, nearer and louder. The shingles on the barn rattled.
It's coming from the barn,
Seth said.
We never looked there,
Kendra said.
I didn't think about it.
The monstrous groan blared a third time. The barn shuddered. Birds flew up from the eaves.
You think something took Grandpa and Lena to the barn?
Kendra said.
Sounds like it's still there.
Grandpa told us never to enter the barn.
I think I'm already grounded,
Seth said.
No, I mean, what if he keeps ferocious creatures in there? It might have nothing to do with his disappearance.
It's our best chance. Where else are we going to look? We have no other clues. The tracks were a dead end. At least we should try to get a peek inside.
Seth started for the barn, with Kendra following reluctantly behind. The towering structure rose a good 5 stories tall, topped by a weather vane in the shape of a bull. Kendra had never studied it for entrances until now. She noted the obvious set of large double doors in the front, along with some smaller access doors along the side. The barn creaked and then started shaking as if there were an earthquake. The sound of timbers splitting filled the air, followed by another mournful moan. Seth glanced back at Kendra. Something huge was in there. A few moments later, the barn grew still. Chains and a heavy padlock bound the double doors in front, so Seth moved along the side of the building, quietly trying the smaller doors. All were locked. The barn had several windows, but the lowest were 3 stories off the ground. They stealthily circled the entire building, finding no doors unlocked. There weren't even any cracks or peepholes.
Grandpa sealed this place up tight, Kendra whispered.
We may have to make some noise to get inside,
Seth said. He started circling the building again.
I'm not sure that would be smart.
I'll wait until the barn starts shaking again.
Seth sat down in front of a small door, little more than 3 feet high. Minutes passed.
Think it knows we're waiting?
Kendra asked.
You're just bad luck.
Stop saying that.
A fairy glided over near them. Seth tried to shoo it away.
Get out of here!
The fairy effortlessly dodged his shooing motions. The more vigorously he waved her away, the closer she came.
Stop it! You're just egging her on,
Kendra said.
I'm sick of fairies.
Then ignore her and maybe she'll leave.
He stopped paying attention to the fairy. She came up right behind his head. When the proximity earned no reaction, the fairy landed on his head. Seth slapped at her, missing as she wove around his intended blows. Just when he jumped to his feet to chase her, the booming groan came again. The little door trembled. Seth plopped back down and started ramming the door with both feet. The moaning muffled most of the impact's noise. On the fifth kick, the edge of the little door split and swung open. Seth rolled away from the opening, and Kendra stepped aside as well. Digging in his pockets, Seth withdrew the remnants of his salt.
Want some?
He mouthed. Kendra accepted some salt. A second or two later, the deafening moaning ceased. Seth gestured for Kendra to wait. He crept through the small door. Kendra waited, squeezing the salt in her palm. Seth reappeared in the opening, wearing an inscrutable expression.
You have to see this,
he said.
What?
Don't worry, come look.
Kendra ducked through the little doorway. The enormous barn contained just one cavernous room, with a few closets around the perimeter. The entire room was dominated by a single gigantic cow.
Not what I expected,
Kendra murmured in disbelief. She gawked at the colossal bovine in amazement. The huge head was up near the rafters, 40 or 50 feet in the air. A hayloft spanning an entire side of the building served as a feed box. The cow's hooves were the size of hot tubs. The tremendous udder was absolutely bulging. Milk beaded and dripped from the teats almost the size of punching bags. The gargantuan cow cocked its head, staring down at the newcomers to the barn. It let out a long moo, making the barn shake simply by shifting its stance.
Holy cow,
Kendra muttered.
You can say that again. I doubt Grandpa will be running out of milk any time soon.
We're friends,
Kendra called up to the cow. The cow tossed its head and began munching from the hayloft.
Why haven't we heard this thing before?
Seth wondered.
She probably never moves. I think she's in pain,
Kendra observed.
See how swollen the udder looks? I bet it could fill a swimming pool.
Seriously?
Somebody probably milks her every morning.
And nobody did today,
said Seth. They stood and stared. The cow continued munching from the hayloft. Seth pointed at the back of the barn.
Look at the manure.
Sick.
The world's biggest cow pie.
You would notice that.
The cow let out another bellowing complaint, the most insistent so far. They clamped their hands over their ears until the lowing stopped.
We probably should try to milk her,
Kendra said.
How are we supposed to do that?
Seth cried.
There has to be a way. They must do it all the time.
We can't even reach her thingies.
I bet that cow could tear this place apart if she wanted. I mean, look at her. She keeps getting more upset. Her udder looks like it's about to burst. Who knows what kind of power she has? Her milk lets people see fairies. The last thing we need is a giant magical cow running around loose. It could be total mayhem.
Folding his arms, Seth surveyed the task.
This is impossible.
We need to search the closets. Maybe they have special tools.
What about Grandpa?
We're out of leads, said Kendra. If we don't milk this cow,
We could end up with a new disaster on our hands. In the closets, they found a variety of tools and equipment, but no obvious gear for milking gargantuan cows. There were empty barrels all around, in and out of closets, which Kendra figured must be used for catching milk. In one closet, Kendra found a couple of A-frame ladders. "These might be all we need," she said.
"How do we even get our hands around those things?"
"We don't."
"There has to be a gigantic milking machine," Seth said.
"I'm not seeing anything like that, but it might work if we just hug and drop."
"Are you nuts?"
"Why not?"
Kendra said, motioning between the teats and the floor.
"It isn't that far from the nipples to the ground."
"We're not trying to use barrels?"
"No, we can waste the milk. Barrels would get in the way. We just need to relieve the pressure."
"What if she steps on us?"
"She hardly has any room to move. If we stay under the udder, we'll be fine."
They dragged the ladders into position, one beside each of the two teats on the same side of the mammoth cow. They climbed the ladders. Only by standing one rung from the top were they high enough to grip the teat near the udder. Seth stood waiting while Kendra tried to get into position.
"These feel wobbly," she said.
"Balance."
She hesitantly stood upright. It felt a lot higher than it had looked from the ground.
"You ready?"
"No. I bet this barn will hold her."
"We have to at least try."
"Hug the thingy and slide down?"
Seth asked.
"We'll trade off. You, then me. Then you, then me. Then we'll do the other side."
"How about you start it?"
"You're better at this sort of stuff," Kendra said.
"Yeah, that's true. I milk a lot of giant cows. I'll show you my trophy sometime."
"Seriously, you start," urged Kendra.
"What if it hurts her?"
"I don't think we're big enough. I'm more worried that we're not going to be able to get any out."
"So I should squeeze as hard as I can," Seth confirmed.
Sure.
"Once I do it, you'll do it, and we'll just keep going as fast as we can."
"And if I ever find a giant cow milking trophy, I'll buy it for you,"
Kendra offered.
I'd rather we keep it our little secret. You ready?"
"Go for it."
Hesitantly, Seth placed a hand against the huge teat. The cow mooed, and he recoiled, crouching and grabbing the ladder with both hands to steady himself. Kendra tried to stay balanced as she laughed. Finally, the foghorn moo ended.
I changed my mind," Seth said.
"I'll count to three," said Kendra.
"You go first, or I'm not doing it. I almost fell and wet my pants at the same time."
"One, two, three."
Seth stepped off the ladder, embracing the teat. He slid down it and fell to the floor along with an impressive jet of milk. Kendra stepped off and hugged the teat as well. Even with her holding tightly, it slid through her embrace faster than she expected. She hit the floor with warm milk already soaking her jeans. Seth was on his way back up the ladder.
"I'm already disgusted," he said,
stepping off and sliding down again. This time he kept his feet when he landed. Kendra went up and slid down again. Hugging as hard as she could, she descended a little more slowly, but still fell over when she hit the floor. Already milk was everywhere. Soon they fell into a rhythm, both of them landing on their feet most of the time. The engorged udder hung low, and they got better at using the teat hug to control their fall. Milk gushed copiously. While they were sliding, the teats sprayed like fire hoses. It must have been at least 70 jumps each before the output began to slacken.
"Other side," Kendra gasped, breathing hard.
"My arms are dead," Seth complained.
"We have to hurry."
They scooted the ladders over and repeated the process. Kendra tried to pretend she was on a surreal playground where the kids waded in milk instead of sand and slid down thick, meaty poles. Kendra focused on climbing the ladder and landing as lightly as possible. She worried that if either action became routine, she could have a bad accident, spraining an ankle, breaking a bone, or worse. At the first sign that the flow of milk was slackening, they collapsed in exhaustion, not worried about lying in milk because their clothes and hair were already drenched. Both of them gulped air desperately. Kendra put a hand to her neck.
My heart is beating like a jackhammer.
I thought I was going to puke. That was so foul, complained Seth.
I'm more tired than sick.
Think about it. You're dripping with warm, raw milk while your face rubs down a cow nipple about 100 times.
More than that.
We doused the whole barn, Seth said. Oh, man, I'm never drinking milk again.
Yeah, I'm never going to the playground, Kendra vowed.
What?
Hard to explain.
Seth scanned the area under the cow.
The floor has drains, but I don't think much of the milk is going down.
I saw a hose. I doubt the cow would like milk rotting all over the place.
Kendra sat up and squeezed milk out of her hair.
That was the best workout I ever had. I'm dead.
If I did that every day, I'd look like Hercules, said Seth.
You mind grabbing the ladders?
Not if you do the hosing.
The hose was long and had good water pressure, and the drains seemed to have plenty of capacity. Flushing the milk away turned out to be the easiest part of the process. Seth had Kendra hose him off and then return the favor. From the time the milking began in earnest, the cow made no more noise and displayed no more interest in them. They called for Grandpa and Lena in the barn, just to be sure, starting with small voices to avoid startling the cow and gradually building to shouts. As had been their lot all day, their calls went unanswered.
Should we go back to the house? Kendra asked.
I guess. It'll be dark before long.
I'm tired and hungry. We should look for food.
They left the barn. The day was waning.
You have a big tear in your shirt, Kendra said.
I ripped it while we were running from that ogress.
I have a pink one you can borrow.
This'll work fine, said Seth. Once it dries off.
The pink one would hide you just as well as the camouflage, Kendra said.
Are all girls as brainless as you?
You're telling me a green shirt will make you invisible to monsters?
No, less visible. Less is the point. Less than your blue one.
I guess I should find a green one, too.